The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello, everyone. This is Brad McDonald, and I'm excited to be subbing in for Stephen Flurry today. Mr. Flurry's off to America. He's heading out there for the four holy days. So you'll have me today, and I think he'll be back perhaps tomorrow from his studio over there at headquarters. Well, I have one main subject I'd like to get into today, but before that, I thought I would go through a couple of news stories here. Obviously, the corona crisis continues. Here in the UK, the talk is just getting more and more serious about a much stronger lockdown. So it does seem like that idea is getting more and more opposition. But over the next week or two, they're talking about even reverting back to a lockdown as strict, if not stricter, than it was back in March and April. So that has a lot of people upset, and it's something that we're all watching very, 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 very closely. The first thing I've wanted to do is just draw everybody's attention to the trumpet brief from Mr. Gerald Flurry last night. This should be in your email box. If you're not subscribed to the trumpet brief, I'd really encourage you to go online to thetrumpet.com and subscribe to this daily email memo. But last night, Mr. Flurry had a trumpet brief, and in that brief, he pointed people towards some remarks that radio commentator Rush Limbaugh made earlier this week. And I can just read a few sentences from this memo or this email from Mr. Flurry. He says, on September 14th, Rush Limbaugh made some remarks with powerful insight that every American should understand. And then he quotes Limbaugh, who said, one of the things that I don't think gets enough comments, and it didn't at the time, is the racial division created in this country by Obama and the Obama administration, he said. And it was done purposely. This is Rush Limbaugh now. And it was done purposefully. And it was a strategic part of implementing whatever aspect of the Obama agenda. It's really a pretty, you can go ahead and read the full brief, but Mr. Flurry, and he quotes Limbaugh quite a bit, he explains how, we really can't underestimate the strategy and the amount of planning that went into creating the present situation in the United States. America is exploding with racial tension and race riots and attacks on the government, attacks on the authority, attacks on the police. And the country is really just coming apart at the seams. And as Rush Limbaugh points out, we really can't underestimate the amount of planning that went into creating these conditions. Today we're really experiencing conditions that have been planned for the past 7 or 8 or 9 years. And when you understand that, you really see that this is not a temporary problem for America. America's problems, its race problems, really go much, much deeper. But go ahead and read that article from Mr. Flurry. Just a couple of concluding remarks here. Nobody, he says, can disprove this powerful insight. It is an unusually profound understanding of American politics. And you probably know that Rush Limbaugh, I think, has, is it throat cancer? He has cancer in the throat or the lungs. I think even now he's missing quite a few programs because he's getting treatment for the cancer. But it seems like, it won't be too long before Rush won't be around to provide analysis like this. A few years ago, we lost Charles Krauthammer. Some of the great commentators, some of the great analysts, some of the great thinkers who can really look into these problems and identify what's going on, at least, to a certain extent, they're no longer around. So it'll be a big loss for America when Rush Limbaugh dies. Then I'll just read this concluding sentence from Mr. Flurry, because I think it gets down to the very essence of it. He says, will you let God show you what is happening. That's really what it boils down to. I mean, Rush Limbaugh provided some excellent analysis here, but as Mr. Fleury points out, even he didn't have the full answers or the full picture. God has to show us. Will you let God show you what is happening, Mr. Fleury asks, and why it is happening? God is giving you a life and death choice. He wants you to choose life. So make sure you subscribe to the Trumpet Brief, and then make sure you read that brief from Mr. Fleury. The other topic I wanted to draw your attention to here at the beginning was a recent survey showing just a shocking ignorance of the Holocaust. The survey was performed by the Conference on Material Jewish Claims Against Germany. It's called the U.S. Millennial Holocaust Knowledge and Awareness Survey. So this was a huge survey performed across all 50 states in America. There are 11,000 people, or more than 11,000 people were interviewed, and all of these people were between the ages of 18 and 39. So millennials, and I think they're called Generation Z, Generation Zers or Generation Z. But these weren't children. These weren't high school students. These were grown adults, many of whom had undoubtedly gone to university. And the results from this survey really are shocking and pretty tragic. Here are just a few quotes from the Claims Conference website. Nationally, there is a clear lack of awareness of key historical facts. 63% of all national survey respondents do not know that 6 million Jews were murdered. And 36%, more than one-third, thought that 2 million or fewer Jews were killed during the Holocaust. Additionally, although there were more than 40,000 camps and ghettos in Europe during the Holocaust, 48% of national survey respondents cannot name a single one. So I mean, I don't think most of us can name just, you know, dozens of the prisoner of war camps in Nazi Germany. But I mean, most of us, if we've read any history, if we've seen Schindler's List or any World War II movie, maybe, you know, we'll be aware of Dachau, or we'll be aware of Auschwitz. But almost 50% of Americans between the age of 18 and 39 cannot name a single prisoner of war camp in Nazi Germany. 56% were unable to identify Auschwitz-Birkenau, and there was virtually no awareness of concentration camps and ghettos overall. Another statistic here, and perhaps one of the most disturbing revelations of this survey, 11% of U.S. millennial and Gen Z respondents believe Jews caused the Holocaust. So more than 10% of adults between the age of 18 and 39 in America believe that the Jews caused the Holocaust. The findings were more disturbing in New York, where an astounding 19% of respondents felt Jews caused the Holocaust. That's just shocking. Almost 20% of these young people in New York believe Jews caused the Holocaust. Just a couple more quotes here. Also troubling is the percentage of millennials and Gen Z that have witnessed Holocaust denial or distortion on social media. Approximately half, or 49%, have seen Holocaust denial or distortion posts on social media or elsewhere online. 30% of respondents across all 50 states indicated that they had seen Nazi symbols on their social media platforms or in their community. The state with the highest response was Nevada, with 70%. Other states with high score, well, don't have to worry about that. But that was pretty shocking. I mean, I'm not sure if this is a news story we've really talked about too much at thetrumpet.com or on the Trumpet Daily Radio. But the way history is being rewritten through these social media platforms, really pretty remarkable. It's something that you don't think about too much. But these young people are coming across Nazi symbols, people supporting Nazism, people defending Nazism, people saying that the Jews were responsible for the Holocaust. they're coming across these kinds of messages on social media. And then finally, just one little quote here. A consistent, and I think this is interesting too, a consistent bright spot across all the survey findings is the desire for Holocaust education. This is a good thing. 64% of all U.S. millennials and Gen Z believe that Holocaust education should be compulsory in school. 80% of all respondents believe that it is important to continue teaching about the Holocaust, in part so that it does not happen again. That's really positive. There's an appetite among 18 to 39-year-olds. There's an appetite for this information. They want to be taught about the Holocaust. They recognize that they need to know more about the Holocaust, and they even recognize that it's important to understand this history so that the history isn't repeated. But they're not being taught about the Holocaust. Why is that? Well, I think if you look into it, I bet you, it'll boil down to the leaders and the decision makers in higher education. And a lot of those people are just, they're radical Marxists. And they're anti-Semitic. And they're making sure that history is not taught or it's at least, marginalized to these kids and to these university students. This is an alarming trend. I mean, when you're ignorant of history, and Mr. Flurry's talked about this a lot, Mr. Gerald Flurry's written about this in The Trumpet, Mr. Stephen Flurry's talked about it here on The Trumpet Daily Radio. But when you're ignorant of history, when you fail to understand how the Holocaust happened, why it happened, when you fail to understand how Hitler and the Nazis gained control of Germany, when you fail to understand the media's failing during the 1930s, when you fail to understand how the German people elected someone like Adolf Hitler, when you don't understand that history, then it becomes easier for that history to be repeated. I mean, you could say the same about all of these protesters, these Black Lives Matter and Antifa terrorists. And then all of the politicians and all of the sports stars and all of the celebrities that are supporting Black Lives Matter and Antifa as they burn down cities, as they create chaos. These people are just ignorant of history. They're ignorant of the history of the Civil War, for example, and they have no idea. They have no idea of the colossal suffering they are unleashing on America. So whether it's World War II or the Holocaust or the Civil War, we can't be ignorant. Ignorance leads to destruction. Ignorance leads to destruction. And this failure to understand history, this failure to understand the Holocaust, to even, I think the survey showed something like 10% of people hadn't even heard the term Holocaust, which was shocking. But if we fail to see this history and to understand this history, we are going to repeat it. Okay, that's the first two stories that I wanted to get into. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll come back and we'll get into the main story for today's program.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily. The Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course is a distance learning program that makes the Bible clear and understandable. The Correspondence Course enables enrollees to learn what the Bible itself says about subjects that affect you and the world you live in. This fascinating Bible course highlights and proves what the Bible says about morality, war, religion, terrorism, and other current events, focusing on the root causes of this world's many problems facing man, as well as their solutions. The Bible and this course also focuses on the reason mankind was created in the first place, the way to happiness, accomplishment, and fulfillment, as well as the truth behind important doctrinal questions, such as what happens after we die, the nature of God, the resurrection, the millennium, and other critical subjects. Enroll today in the Herbert W. Armstrong Bible Correspondence Course. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back. I'm Brad McDonald, and I'm covering the show today for Mr. Stephen Flurry. Well, earlier this week, the Caribbean island nation of Barbados announced that it's going to remove the Queen as head of state and become a republic by November 2021. Dame Sandra Mason, the Governor General, she announced this to the nation on Tuesday. Here's the clip of the Governor General making this announcement.
The time has come to fully leave our colonial past behind. Barbadians want a Barbadian head of state. This is the ultimate statement of confidence in who we are and what we are capable of achieving. Hence, Barbados will take the next logical step towards full sovereignty and become a republic. By the time we celebrate our 55th anniversary of independence.
So this didn't receive too much attention in the news. I guess Barbados isn't a huge nation, and people probably don't think too much these days about, you know, a country declaring sovereignty. It's not a big deal to a lot of people that they want to get rid of Queen Elizabeth as the head of the state. But it really is a pretty major development. And more than anything, I think it reveals a trend that we're seeing. And it absolutely is part of a key prophecy that we're seeing unfold in this world. You know, that prophecy in 2 Kings 14, that prophecy that talks about the movement that's afoot, inspired by the devil, to destroy the name Israel. That's what this announcement is connected to. Barbados became independent in 1966, but since then it's been part of the British Commonwealth, and the Queen has been its head of state. Of course, before 1966, Barbados was under British rule. It had been since, I think, the early 17th century. It was one of England's primary West Indies colonies. During the 1700s and 1800s, it produced an enormous amount of sugar for England. And as I said, it was one of England's most crucial colonies. But they want to remove the Queen now as the head of state. This is the first time a Commonwealth nation has come out and removed the Queen as the head of state since 1992. Mauritius, the little nation of Mauritius. Where is Mauritius, Sam? Is that off the coast of Africa or in the Pacific? We think it's Africa. I should have checked that. But Mauritius left the Commonwealth in 1992 and got rid of the Queen as head of state, and now Barbados is doing the same. And just researching this story this morning, it really seems that it's inevitable that more Commonwealth countries are about to do the same thing and follow the example of Barbados. I guess more than anything, this decision is symbolic. Barbados was self-governing and independent already. But it is symbolic. It is important. It's entirely unsurprising given the times that we live in and the trends that we see unfolding. When you look at this world, there's just an attack on tradition. There's an attack on monarchy. There's an attack on certainly empire and colonialism. So it's no surprise that we would see Barbados and undoubtedly other nations getting rid of the Queen as head of state. But listening to the Governor General's remarks there and then just researching this morning, I was, you know, surprised by two or three things. First of all, I was a little surprised by the lack of gratitude and recognition that the Governor General had for Britain and for the Queen. There was just, to be honest, it just wasn't a very, it wasn't a very gracious announcement. There's no doubt that Britain's history on the island of Barbados is pretty checkered. This island was a key part of Britain's slave trade back in the 1700s. But there's also an enormous amount of positive history. First of all, Britain was the first nation to eradicate slavery, and Barbados was one of the first places where Britain started to get rid of slavery around 1806. And it experienced the benefits of the British Empire's effort, crusade, to remove slavery. But beyond that, the British Empire, I mean, it practically built this island. A lot of the infrastructure, the roads, the political infrastructure, the education system, the economy and all the different parts of the economy, a lot of that was established by Britain and thanks to its relationship with Britain. I mean, Britain has invested millions, hundreds of millions of dollars in this little island nation. And there was no recognition of that. There was no appreciation of that. There was no, you know, our time with Britain has been invaluable. We appreciate all of the investments that have taken place, but we feel it's time to move on. There was none of that. Just no gratitude. The other observation I made was sad to see the response from Britain's government. And I wasn't even able to find a response from the monarchy, from Buckingham Palace. But the official response from Downing Street really was very, very sad. Just total apathy and indifference. A spokesman for Downing Street said it was the decision for Barbados and the government there. But that Britain would continue to, quote, enjoy a partnership with the Caribbean island nation as members of the Commonwealth. He said, we obviously have a shared history and remain united with Barbados in terms of history, culture, and language, and we will continue to have and enjoy a partnership with them. But just researching this article, looking at this story, I couldn't find a single person or a single article, and maybe I just didn't look hard enough, but I couldn't find a single person or article opposing this announcement. A single person or a single article defending the Queen or the British Commonwealth. Now, we would expect, you know, the woke people to obviously support Barbados's decision here because, well, this decision, you know, it goes against the monarchy. It marginalizes the monarchy. It marginalizes the British Commonwealth. But even among the non-woke, even among, you know, people who still value tradition and people who would maybe defend the Commonwealth or defend the Queen or like the monarchy, there was just a lot of indifference, a lot of apathy. And this is pretty sad. You don't have to attack the monarchy or the empire to destroy it. You don't have to be actively, you know, working against it like many, many people are to be part of the movement to destroy the monarchy or the empire. You can destroy it through just apathy and indifference. We've seen this. We've seen this in the history of the Church of God. Mr. Flurry's written about this quite extensively in literature. You know, there is a group of people who actively try to destroy God's work and destroy God's government and destroy the office of Mr. Armstrong. But then there were a lot of people too who were just apathetic and indifferent to the changes, to the attacks that were made. And, you know, because of their apathy, because of their indifference, you know, the forces of hate, the forces of evil were able to thrive. And that's really what we're seeing around this world, particularly when it comes to, you know, the institution of the monarchy and the British Empire. A lot of people, particularly here in Britain, a lot of people, you know, wouldn't agree with the radical leftists when they attack the empire and all of their hatred for the monarchy. They wouldn't agree with that. But on the other hand, you know, most people are not prepared to fight for the monarchy. They're not prepared to defend the empire. They're apathetic and indifferent. And that will lead to the destruction of a nation and to the destruction of an institution like the monarchy. Now, prophetically, this decision Barbados is also significant because, as I mentioned earlier, it's really about the dissolution of the British Empire. As I mentioned, I'm sure there'll be more nations in the British Commonwealth who shed the constitutional monarchy form of government, who want to get rid of the Queen. Just researching this story earlier this morning, I think when the Queen dies, you know, that's really going to be a seminal moment for the empire and the British Commonwealth and the monarchy. I'll give you some statistics here in a minute, but it really looks like there's a lot of people in Australia, in Canada, in Jamaica. There's a lot of people who basically they want to get out of the Commonwealth. They want to become a republic. They want to get rid of the Queen as their head of state, but you know, they don't want to do it while the Queen's still alive. But as soon as the Queen dies, they're out. Just some facts here. In Canada, a February poll found that 53% said they thought Canada should end formal ties to the monarch after the Queen's death. A YouGov poll in January showed that abolishing the monarchy was the most popular option for all ages. A lot of people love the Queen in Canada, but they don't like the institution of monarchy. In Australia, a July poll found that 62% of Australians think the country should have an Australian head of state, not the royal family. There was a referendum in 1999, and I think 55% of people voted for the Queen to remain. 45% voted that she go. And it was pretty close, but that was 1999. That's 20 years ago now, more than 20 years ago. And the polls and the surveys show that that wouldn't be the case now. Another vote after the death of the Queen would probably go the other way. Former Australian Prime Minister John Howard indicated Australia could abolish the monarchy after the Queen died. "I do not believe Australia will become a republic while the Queen is on the throne," he said. "Beyond that, I do not know." So it really could be a big moment for the British Commonwealth when the Queen dies, and she looks like she's in good health. But on the other hand, I think she's 93 or 94, 95 years old, and just a really remarkable woman, really remarkable and beautiful woman. But what's going to happen to the monarchy? What's going to happen to the Commonwealth when Queen Elizabeth, dies? Here's another little one. Royal watchers are saying Jamaica could be the next domino to fall. A poll in July found 58% of Jamaicans wanted to cut ties with the monarchy. It's been like this for a while, but the only reason it hasn't happened is the big parties haven't really agreed on how to do it. But will Barbados's example, show them how to do it? So the Commonwealth is coming apart. The royal family here in Britain is disintegrating. Of course, some of the greatest enemies of the British monarchy, particularly here in the last few years, have emerged from within the royal family itself. And I'm talking mainly about Prince Harry and his wife. We've talked about this a little bit on this program and on thetrumpet.com. I'm sure, you know, most of our listeners are aware that Prince Harry and Meghan Markle have moved to, I think, California. They have this massive palatial estate in California, and Harry's on terrible terms with the Queen and with his brother and his brother's wife and the family. I mean, he's really cut himself off from the royal family, and then he's taken on a lot of woke friends. His friends now are Meghan's friends, I guess, and his friends now are really, you know, some of the most extreme far left figures in America. There's the Obamas. I think he he pals around with different Hollywood actors and personalities. Here recently, Harry and Meghan made a massive deal with Netflix. I'm sure we're all aware of Netflix, just this, well, I mean, Netflix, I mean, they all produce pretty bad programming these days, but it really does seem like Netflix is one of the worst. It just produces some of the most despicable, anti-family, anti-tradition, anti-Christian content that you can even find anywhere. A couple of years ago, the Obamas made a massive deal with Netflix, and now Harry and Meghan too have signed up to make TV programming with Netflix. After that, or more recently than that, Harry has he's also come out very strongly against the Commonwealth. Over the summer, Harry and Meghan really put themselves squarely on the side of the Antifa protesters and the BLM movement, and came out in support of these movements in a July 1st message. This was an online talk that he had. I think Meghan was there. He did a couple of them. But in one he did on July 1st, Harry indicated that he believed Britain was an inherently racist society. He declared that, quote, racism is endemic in our societies. My wife said recently that our generation and the ones before us haven't done enough to right the wrongs of the past, he said. I too am sorry. A few days after that, I think it was July 8th or July 9th, Harry and Meghan joined some fellow radicals in a Zoom conversation that was broadcast live. And in this conversation, he once again attacked the Commonwealth. We have a few clips. Let's play clip two.
Certainly, when you look across the Commonwealth, there's no way that we can move forward unless we acknowledge the past. And I think so many people have done such an amazing, incredible job of acknowledging the past and trying to right those wrongs. But I think we all acknowledge on here that there is so much more still to do. It's not going to be easy, and in some cases, it's not going to be comfortable. But it needs to be done, because guess what? Everybody benefits. So I think there's a lot that we together need to acknowledge, but I only see hope and optimism.
Well, I think Prince Harry sees things that a lot of people don't see. If he sees only hope and optimism in you know, discarding the history of the Commonwealth and then embracing movements like Black Lives Matter and Antifa, I mean, there's no hope and optimism in Antifa. Where's the hope and optimism on the streets of Portland? I mean, you have to have pretty special insight to see hope and optimism on the streets of Portland and Seattle and Chicago and Kenosha and New York. I don't know where that hope and optimism is that Harry sees in this global movement to promote Antifa and BLM. And again, just remember too that Prince Harry here, he wasn't talking about the British Empire. He was talking about the British Commonwealth. And the British Commonwealth is a free association of democratic nations. I think there's about 54 or 56 of them. All of them, they can leave at any time. The Secretary General of the Commonwealth is a black woman. And it really hasn't received any negative press. Any negative press whatsoever. But Harry and Meghan come out and they're even attacking the British Commonwealth. And as I just mentioned, even Meghan went after the British Commonwealth. Here's what she said in that same conversation.
We have to, in this moment in time, say, we're going to have to be a little uncomfortable right now. Mm. Because it's only in pushing through that discomfort that we get to the other side of this and find the place, as you're pointing out, where a high tide raises all ships. Mm. Equality does not put anyone on the back foot. It puts us all on the same footing.
I mean, when you really listen to these words, it's really pretty chilling. We all have to be uncomfortable. I mean, when these people talk, they condone the unrest. They condone the destruction that we're seeing and the way they see it. Well, that's what has to happen for us to heal this terrible sin. That's what has to happen. Or everyone has to be uncomfortable. I mean, how uncomfortable are our peoples going to have to get before these people will be satisfied? And then, you know, when you start moving in this direction of making people uncomfortable, well, who draws the line about how uncomfortable conditions are made? I mean, there's a difference between being uncomfortable about something someone says to you, or, you know, being held accountable, you know, for something that happened in history, and then having your community burned down. I mean, is that uncomfortable enough for these people? Or does an entire city need to be burnt down? Is that going to be enough discomfort for us before we move past this? I mean, these are chilling words, and it's a chilling mentality that these people are sharing and promoting in this discussion. The Queen's grandson, the grandson of the Queen of England. He didn't just condone the British Commonwealth. He enthusiastically endorsed Black Lives Matter. Here's the clip.
For the first time ever, thanks to the Black Lives Matter movement, that doesn't have a single address, doesn't have a single leader. It is a movement that is swept across the world, that finally everybody who knows and recognizes the wrong in this for years and years, decades, hundreds of years gone by, that this is the moment when people are starting to be listened to.
I mean, there it is. Prince Harry, the Queen's grandson, happily, willingly, enthusiastically endorsing, you know, a movement whose existence, or one of the reasons for its existence, as it says on its own website, is to, quote, disrupt the Western prescribed nuclear families. This movement encourages people to resist white capitalism. This movement is a movement of hate and discontent. It's a radical Marxist group that fundamentally opposes Western civilization and hates America and Britain's history with Christianity and morality. It's tragic that the Duke of Sussex will come out and he'll endorse the beliefs and the behavior of Black Lives Matter. Where is all this heading? I mean, this man and his wife, I think, you know, it really looks like they're turning into, you know, one of the greatest enemies of the British monarchy. The Queen's own grandson is turning against her, and they have this, you know, $100 to $150 million deal with Netflix, and him and his wife now are going to be producing all this new content. I mean, imagine the damage that Prince Harry could do. I mean, he knows the Queen. He's probably, you know, one of the people that's been in her inner circle all of his life. He knows the Queen. He knows the family. He knows Buckingham Palace and Kensington. I mean, what if he took some of that information and turned it into a documentary for Netflix or something like that? I mean, it just wouldn't be surprising at all. And maybe again, he'll wait till his grandmother dies out of respect for his grandmother. But then if the Queen dies, I mean, would it really be surprising to see Harry and Meghan get together and you know, we have this new movie or documentary where he just slanders the monarchy? I don't know, but it does seem like he's operating at least in that spirit. I just want to have a quote here. This is from James Dellingpole. He wrote this earlier this month, September 6th, about Prince Harry. The title of this article is "Prince Harry is Britain's Most Toxic Export Since Piers Morgan." I guess James Dellingpole and Piers Morgan must have a little competition going on. But Dellingpole writes, "The Duke and Duchess of Sussex, the international embarrassments formerly known as Prince Harry and Princess Meghan, have signed a Netflix production deal worth a rumored $100 to $150 million. But not a cent of this money will be spent on anything any of us would dream of watching. As you can tell from the couple's ominous statement on the kind of programming they intend to create. This is what they said. Through our work with diverse communities and their environments to a shining a light on people and causes around the world, our focus will be on creating content that informs but also gives hope. Back to James Dalrymple. I hope they didn't pay anyone to write this execrable subliterate bilge, but I don't think they did. I reckon that drivel came straight out. Well, that gets a bit personal. I won't read that. But a little further down, talking about the content that he expects Harry and Meghan to produce, it will be pure woke propaganda. And because it will be pure woke propaganda, any hope it gives will be entirely illusory. There is nothing hope-inducing about woke because it is an ideology fundamentally opposed to the very things most of us consider to be what make life worth living and our civilization civilized. Sure, Harry and Meghan aren't actually on the streets of Portland chucking Molotov cocktails at police and assassinating people they claim to be Nazis, but they sure share and promote the same cry-bully victimhood politics of those who are. The reason the radical left is out of control and itching for civil war is because for years it has been brainwashed by Hollywood movies, by their teachers, by their college professors, by the latest agiprop bestsellers into believing that America is a racist construct, that capitalism is wrong, that Western civilization is something of which we should be ashamed, and that cleansing revolution is now the only solution. Harry and Meghan, not that they weren't already to a degree, have now become fully paid-up members of that woke propaganda industry. It's time they were held to account for it. I mean, he's absolutely right. They're right there in the middle of Hollywood, surrounded by, you know, all of these woke Hollywood actors and the Obamas. They're right at the center of it. And now they have a big deal with Netflix, one of the most influential, you know, streaming platforms online. The concluding line to this article is pretty sobering. If the world goes belly up, Dalrymple writes, in the next few months or years, as I seriously worry it might, then the Duke of Sussex will have done his bit to make it happen. History will not look kindly on him. So very, very sad what's happening with Britain's royal family. Very, very sad to see what's happening with Prince Harry and Meghan. And really, if we know, you know, if we know Bible prophecy, we know too that God does not look kindly on Harry and Meghan's behavior. And God, he wouldn't look kindly on Barbados's recent gesture toward the Queen. And he wouldn't look kindly on these movements in Australia and Canada and New Zealand too, I think, to get rid of the monarchy and to cut ties with the monarchy. What is this attack on the monarchy? What is this attack on the British Commonwealth all about? Well, we've been talking a lot the past few months about the cause or the spirit behind this attack in 2 Kings 14, 26 and 27. Both Mr. Flurries have been going to these verses a lot, talking about Jeroboam the Second, and we know there's a second Jeroboam the Second, and what happened here anciently in Israel happens today in the nations of Israel. Verses 26 and 27, it says, "For the Lord saw the affliction of Israel, that it was very bitter, so they were being persecuted. For there was not any shut up, nor any left, nor any helper for Israel. And the Lord said not that he would blot out the name of Israel from under heaven." So there's a movement afoot, anciently but also today. There's a movement afoot to blot out the name of Israel from under heaven. And as you know, the Bible teaches, and you can prove in the Bible that today the nations of America and Britain and the British Commonwealth, we are Israel. And in all of these end time prophecies, when it talks about Israel, it's talking about America and Britain. And there is a Satan-inspired movement to destroy the name Israel, to destroy the history and all of the biblical truth and understanding attached to this name. This is what Mr. Flurry wrote: in America has been fundamentally transformed. Satan hates everything God is about. He harbors terrible hatred for Israel. Spiritual Israel, Galatians 4 tells us that God's church is spiritual Israel, and physical Israel, the modern day nations descended from ancient Israel, particularly America, Britain, and the Jewish state. Satan's goal is to blot out the name of Israel from under heaven. That means from all over the earth. That's what this rebellion Harry and Meghan are participating in is all about. That's what this rebellion against the monarchy is all about. That's what the now routine attacks on the British Empire and Britain's colonial past are all about. That's what the rejection of the Queen by Barbados and undoubtedly others is all about. And when we understand this prophecy, it really sheds so much light on world events and trends that we see unfolding in the world. And, you know, you can go back to Genesis 12. We first see God's prophecy to Abraham made in Genesis chapter 12 back there. God makes this colossal promise to Abraham because of his faith. And it's a twofold promise. It's a promise of grace or salvation through Jesus Christ, the descendant of Abraham. But it's also a promise of national wealth and prosperity and power. And as Mr. Armstrong explains, in the United States of Britain in prophecy, most people do not understand this promise of national wealth and power. A lot of people understand, they at least recognize the promise of grace. They don't understand it, but they know that Jesus Christ came as our Savior and that salvation is through Christ. But almost no one understands that God also made a promise to Abraham that his descendants would become supremely powerful, that Abraham's descendants would become a commonwealth of nations. Almost no one today is aware of the second part of God's promise to Abraham, the national material promise that his descendants would become a great nation. And this promise, I mean, it's everywhere in the Bible and particularly in the book of Genesis. This promise is one of the themes of the book of Genesis. And we see God repeat the promise to Abraham. He mentions it initially in Genesis 12. He mentions it again in Genesis 17. In Genesis 26, God confirms this promise to Isaac, Abraham's son. In Genesis 27, the promise is confirmed to Jacob, Abraham's grandson. In Genesis 28, we see the promise confirmed again. This one to Jacob, I believe. I'll just read a couple of verses here. This is verses 13 and 14 of Genesis 28. And behold, the Eternal said, I am the Eternal God of Abraham, your father, and the God of Isaac. The land wherein you lie, to thee will I give it, and to your seed. And your seed shall be the dust of the earth, and you shall spread abroad, or you'll be a colonizing power. You shall spread abroad to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south. Again, this indicates that when this promise to Abraham is fulfilled, you know, the specific descendants, and it's Ephraim and Manasseh, as you'll see if you read United States and Britain in prophecy, they'd be colonizing powers. Again, in Genesis 35, we see this promise again. And God, this is in Genesis 35:10, we see God change Jacob's name to Israel. And then verse 11, he says, and God said unto him, I am God Almighty, be fruitful and multiply, a nation and a company of nations shall be of you. I mean, God's very, these verses are incredible because they're so specific. He tells Israel, a nation and a company of nations, or a commonwealth, a group of nations, will come out of you. You can go to Genesis 48 after that, and you can see Jacob, or Israel, passing this promise on to Ephraim and Manasseh, the sons of Joseph. And again, God is incredibly specific. So he's blessing both Ephraim and Manasseh. And you can read the history where God inspired Jacob or Israel to cross his hands. And the firstborn went on Ephraim instead of Manasseh. He tries to fix that. But then God says, talking about Manasseh, God says, he shall become a people and he shall be great. Talking about America there. But truly his younger brother shall be greater than he, and his seed. So this is talking about the descendants of Ephraim now. His seed shall become a multitude of nations, or a collection, or a commonwealth of nations. Over and over again, the Bible talks about this promise to Abraham. Why is it so important? Why is the name Israel so important? Why is the understanding about Israel and the promise that God made to Abraham, why is it so important? Mr. Armstrong answered that question all the way through the United States and Britain in prophecy. Here's a quote from page 7. But the all-important master key, you know, the key to understanding the Bible and Bible prophecy and world events, the all-important master key has been found. That key is knowledge of the astonishing identity of the American and British peoples, as well as the German in biblical prophecies. That's why the British Commonwealth is so important, because it reveals the identity of those nations. It reveals the fact that Ephraim is descended from Abraham. And when you understand that Ephraim is descended from Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, well, then you can understand Bible prophecy. Mr. Armstrong continues, this very eye-opening, astounding identity is the strongest proof of the inspiration and authority of the Holy Bible. That's quite a statement. This very eye-opening and astounding identity, the identity of Ephraim and Manasseh, the identity of America and Britain, is the strongest proof that we have of the inspiration and authority of the Holy Bible. It is, at the same time, the strongest proof of the very active existence of the living God. What a statement. You see, the truth about Israel reveals God's existence. And it's proof of that the Bible is God's word. That is a stunning reality. And that's why the devil, as it talks about in 2 Kings 14, that's why Satan works so hard to blot out the name Israel, to blot out the truth about America and Britain, to blot out all of the history of the past 200 years in particular. Because he knows, he understands this. He understands what Mr. Armstrong wrote here in United States and Britain Prophecy. And that's why he tries to blot it out. Here's another quote. This is on page 109. The most remarkable fulfillment of biblical prophecy in modern times was the sudden sprouting forth of the two mightiest world powers. One, a commonwealth of nations forming the greatest world empire of all time. The other, the wealthiest, most powerful nation on earth today. These birthright peoples came with incredible suddenness into possession of more than two-thirds of the cultivated wealth and resources of the whole world. This sensational spurt from virtual obscurity in such a short time gives incontrovertible proof of divine inspiration. Never in all history did anything like it occur. This is why the history of Britain and America are so special to us. It's not ultimately because of the physical wealth and prosperity. It's certainly not because of any racial superiority or anything like that. The history of these nations is so special and so important, and these nations are exceptional because of what God promised to Abraham, and because they inherited the promise that God made to Abraham. And ultimately, because the history of these nations and the existence of these nations and the existence of the British Commonwealth and the existence of Britain's monarchy, they prove God's existence. They prove that the Bible is God's word. They introduce us to God's mind and God's plan. It's awesome. But that's why we see so much hatred, and that's why we see so many attacks on the royal family and on the monarchy and on the British Commonwealth and the British Empire and on colonialism and on America's, you know, special history. It's all, as we've been saying, as Mr. Flurry, you know, first began saying 2, 3, 4 years ago, and then we've just been coming along explaining it behind him. It's all about Satan the devil trying to destroy Israel, and the way Israel and the truth about Israel proves God's existence and proves God's love for humanity. Well, I had another section in my notes, but I guess we're not going to get there. Maybe if I give the program again, I can come back to those. Thanks for listening, and have a terrific day.